The Eddie B. Sit edition and audio series of the Talmud Bavli.
Masechet Rosh Hashanah. Masechet Rosh Hashanah has been sponsored by Mr. Sawley and Cheryl Mizrahi. Hashem Aleihem Yihyu for the Hatzlacha of both of their families, for Be'ezat Hashem, health, happiness, Parnasa, continued success, and of course, much nachat and pleasure from their children. Yiratzon, in the zechut of their dedication to the Masechet Rosh Hashanah, they will be zoche for good judgment, they will be zoche for good beracha and mazal in all their endeavors. Amen. Daf Chav Gimal. Today's daf is being studied the Lunishmat of Raham ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tenichenu began Eden. Amen. Today's daf is being studied the Refuah Shirema Eliyahu Hayim ben Shafia Sofia. Enna refana lo, enna refana lo, enna refana lo betuch shar chole amo Israel. Amen. We begin today's daf on Chav Bet Amud Bet, and we will start five lines from the bottom. The Mishnah told us that originally, the way they used to inform the exile about the Rosh Chodesh was through a system of torches. And the Mishnah said it, Barishona hayu masi'in masu'ot. They would light torches. And they would stand on respective mountains, and from mountain to mountain, they would relay the message until it would get all the way to Babel. So the Gemara now first works on the semantics of the word masi'in. Masi'in means to light the torches, masu'ot. So the Gemara says, Me'e mashma. How do you know the masi'in lishna di yikudhu? How do you know that the word masi'in is a language of yikud, of burning, of fire? The pasuk says when David HaMelech went to war against the Philistines, so he burnt their avodah zarah. So it says v'yisaim David. Now, how do we know v'yisaim is to burn? Because the Targum explains v'okdinan David, and David burnt. He set aflame. So therefore, we know the root of the word masi'in is to
burn.
Burn to make a fire. Taru Rabbanan, we have a braita. In masi'in masu'ot, we only make these torch signals. Ela ala chodesh shenir'ah bizmano lekadesho. On a chodesh, on a month that was sanctified in its right time, which means the 30th day is Rosh Chodesh. I mean, the month was 29, it's chodesh haser, 30th day being really day one. So on that day, chodeshim like that are subject to the laws of the torches. Now, when do they send up the torch signals? Le'or Iburo, which is the night following the day of Ibur. The day of Ibur is the 30th day. Always the 30th day is called Yom Ibur, because that's the day in the event that it's Chodesh Maleh, they would add that day to the month. So that's the pregnated day. That's the day they would add to the month. So Yom Ibur. So now, if let's say Rosh Chodesh, the 30th, was on a Tuesday, so the torch signals will be given Tuesday night. After Rosh Chodesh, have to wait till it's sanctified by Beit Din. Tuesday night, the following night, which is really the night of the 31st, they would give the torch signal, so the people would know retroactively that Rosh Chodesh was the day before. So the Gemara says, "Lememra be'achaser avdinan amale lo avdinam." So we learn from this Gemara rule that the torches were only done when the month was haser, but not male. So Gemara says, "My tama, what's the reason for this?" Amar Rabbi Zera Gezera Mishum Rosh Chodesh Haser Shehaliyot Be'Erev Shabbat. So Gezera, in a case where Rosh Chodesh Haser falls out on a Friday, which means the previous month was the 29th month. So Thursday was the 29th. Rosh Chodesh, the 30th, was a Friday. So the Gemara says, Emat Avde, when are you going to make the torches? You can't make the torches obviously on Friday night, the Shabbat. Be'apukeh Shabbatah. So you're going to have to do the torches on Motzei Shabbat. Now, the Iyamat Na'avid Name Amaleh. Now, if you're going to tell me that they used to do the torches as well on a Chodesh Maleh, the people are going to be confused. They're not going to understand why. Atu Limit'eh. They're going to come and make a mistake. Amre. Either they'll say the following, Hai Haseru. They'll say that this month is a month that is Haser, meaning Friday is was the Rosh Chodesh. Behind the lo avid me'etmol, and the reason why they didn't do it yesterday, mishum de lo efshar, because they couldn't, because Friday night. So that's one option. And if they think of that, that'll be okay. However, od dilma, but they might also confuse and say malehu. They'll say maybe the reason why they're doing it on Saturday night is because it's say Chodesh malehu bizmano avdu. And they're doing it in the proper time. And therefore, since in the case where Rosh Chodesh is on a Friday, Haser, the people are going to be confused at the Saturday night signal. they're not going to know if the Saturday night signal is a haser indication, or is the Saturday night signal a male indication. So for that reason, we do not do the signals on male. And therefore they'll know, when they see the Saturday night signal, they say, it's not for the male, it's got to be for the haser, so therefore they'll know Friday was Rosh Chodesh. So that's how you alleviate that problem. So the Gemara still questions. V'le'abid ben amale ben haser, still. Do it on both. Malin Hasid. Vichim Miklar Rosh Chodesh Be'erev Shabbat. And when Rosh Chodesh will fall out on a Friday, Lo Le'abit Klal. Don't do anything on Motzei Shabbat. Vichivan De'lo Avdinan Motzei Shabbat. Since you will not do anything in that case on Motzei Shabbat, Ve'avdinan Amaleh. But normally you would do it on Amaleh. Midai Yad'ed De'haseru. Then automatically people know it's Hasid. Because normally on a 31st, let's say, where the Chodesh is Maleh, they would do it that night, let's say. Right? However, in this case over here, don't do it on Motzei Shabbat. Rosh Chodesh is on Friday, 30th. 31st is Shabbat. Don't do it on Motzei Shabbat. So you know what the people are going to say? It's a Haser this month. Because if it was a Maleh, they would do it on Motzei Shabbat. So you figured out a way to do Haser and Malehs. Are you worried about the Friday situation? No problem. We solved that issue. Don't do it on Motzei Shabbat. Everybody will know it's a Haser. Because if it was a Maleh, they would have done it. So the Gemara says, no. Afilu hacher, even so, atu limit'eh. The people will still come to make a mistake if you don't do it on Motzei Shabbat. Amre hay malehu. They'll still think it's a maleh. No, so I come in and do it. V'hay delo avde itnusehu deitnuseh. They'll think some type of anus, certain situation arose that they couldn't do it. For example, there was drunkenness. People drink on Shabbat. And therefore they'll say, you know what, really it is a maleh. And really, the response is Shabbat. He said, where are the witnesses? How come they didn't show up? And they didn't show up because probably they were drunk, and therefore they couldn't get there. So therefore, again, doing it on a Maleh, you're going to run into a problem. In the case where the Chodesh is on Friday, by saying, don't do any torch signals, right? And you'll say, okay, there's no torch signals. The people will know exactly what's going on. Because if you do it on a Hasid and a Maleh, they'll say, how come you didn't do it on a Motzei Shabbat? Must be because it's a haser. They're going to make a mistake. They'll still think it's a maleh, and they'll say that a problem arose. So to that, the Tosafot just asks the question, Tosafot says, fine. So therefore, only do on a haser. You still have a problem. Because if you only do on a haser, let's say Rosh Chodesh is on the Shabbat. Let's say Shabbat is maleh. And on that Shabbat, it is a Rosh Chodesh. Okay, on the maleh. Now what's going to happen? Motzei Shabbat, you're not gonna do anything. Because you don't do on a maleh. But the people are going to think that what?
Which yesterday.
That could be it was yesterday, and therefore what?
It was
Hasid. That something, a circumstance happened. Let's read that inside Tosfot. The Imtomar. The Ashtar Namid, the Lo Avdu Amaleh, Klal. Now that you tell me that you don't do Tap Tosfot, you don't do Amaleh at all. Ki Mehal Rosh Chodesh Maleh B'Shabbat. When Rosh Chodesh comes up Maleh on Shabbat, Yomru, Hai Haseru. The people are going to think what? It's Chodesh Haser. And the reason why they didn't do it on Motzei Shabbat, itnuseh. Which is, we're not going to do it on Motzei Shabbat because we don't do it on Malehs, correct? But the people are going to think like this. The people are going to say, really, it's a Haser. And the reason why they didn't do it on Motzei Shabbat because a circumstance arose. Which is, you're still going to have the same problem when you're doing only on Haser. How are you going to alleviate the problem of Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh Maleh? Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh Maleh. Because we're not gonna do it on that night, because we don't do it on Malehs. Right? So you say, oh, we don't do it on Malehs, but the people are not going to know. They're going to think that we didn't do it. They're going to think it's Haser, but the reason why they didn't do it on Motzei Shabbat is because of Itnuseh, that they had a circumstance. So they're going to come out with the wrong day. So Tosfot answers a very important answer. V'yesh lomar, De'echa de'vaday avdeh le'olam masu'ot ben amaleh ben ahaser, ki lo avdeh klal, vaday talu be'ones. Which means, in a case where they do Haser and Maleh, always, every month is either a Haser or Maleh, they're always doing the torches. So when one night or one Rosh Chodesh they don't do the torches, then already people will say must be there was some type of onus. However, Aval Hashad the Zimin Avdu Zimin Lo Avdeh, but in this case where you're only doing it on Hasers, so then they're not gonna say that when you didn't do the torches, that there was an onus. Because it's not standard every month. Which is only on the sevara that says you do on Hasid and Malehs, then we'll use the sevara of onus. That the people are going to say, oh, must be they wanted to do it, because they always do it, but the onus came up. But if you're only doing it on Hasid, so therefore we don't use the sevara of itnuseh. So therefore, we only do it on Hasid, let's say, at this point. What's going to happen when the Chodesh comes out on Shabbat, Maleh? Good, we only do it on Haser. And therefore, what's Shabbat when they don't see any torch signal? But we don't do it on Maleh. Okay. And therefore, they will automatically know that it is a Male. Therefore, the Anos Shabbat is a male. They're not going to come along and make a mistake. Comes the Gemara and says, "Ve'le'avid amale, ve'lo le'avid haser." Klal. The Gemara says, "Okay, one last scenario. Only do it on male. Don't do it on haser. Which is, you should only do it on the 31st, is Rosh Chodesh, the following night. Don't do it on haser at all." Now, what will that help you? So look at that sheet. "Ve'le'avid amale ve'lo haser. V'chimik la Rosh Chodesh haser ve'elim Shabbat." When Rosh Chodesh falls out on Friday, velo avdinan, and they're not going to do the signal midaya da'eh de haseru. They're going to know that it is a haser, because otherwise they would have done it on Motzei Shabbat, because you do it on Malez. And since they didn't do it on Motzei Shabbat, which is the Malez, they'll automatically know that Friday was the Rosh Chodesh. Velo talu b'shikrut ela b'midi d'shchiyach. The kol chodeshim haserim lo avdinan v'ayin nami lo avud. Right, they're going to go what was prevalent. So therefore, the Gemara is saying now the Malez would solve all problems. Always do it on the Malay. Aye, what about Rosh Chodesh comes out on a Friday? Perfect. Shabbat means it's Shabbat the 31st day. They're not going to do it on Motzei Shabbat, because really the Chodesh is not Malay. People say, oh, there's no Motzei Shabbat torches. Must be it was on Friday. Then every day everybody's good. Kevinati, you have one problem, but you have a problem against Rosh Hashanah. Because by doing it on Malay, you're going to cause stoppage of work unnecessarily for the people for 2 days. Why? So let's read the Rashi. אמר רבי ימישו ביטול מלאכה ולא גרסינן גזירה. אוקיי, אי אמרת, if you're going to say נעביד המלא ולא החסר, to do it on the מלא נער and the חסר, אין לך ראש השנה שאין מתפתלים בין הגולה ממלאכה שני ימים. Every ראש השנה is going to be a 2 day event, and you're going to cause the people to stop from מלאכה. Why? יום למד שם מהיום ראש השנה. Well, the 30th, always you have to stop working. No matter what, every year on the 30th, they never went to work in the Golah, because maybe that was going to be the day of Rosh Chodesh. Now, v'yom shiloshim ve'ehad, they would also, in certain situations, have to be concerned about the 31st day, shem ma'avru ot ha'chodesh. V'ayom Rosh Hashanah. And maybe the Rosh Hashanah is really the second day. Aval ki avdira masu ot ha'chaser, but when you're going to do the torches on the chaser, le'or yud lamed, yad'esh shebiyom shiloshim nikba'. ויעשו מלאכה למחר ואין בטלין שני ימים אלא במעובר, which means by doing the torches on a chaser, that means let's say Tuesday was 30, right? Tuesday night they do the torches, so everybody knows that Tuesday was Rosh Hashanah. Well, they celebrated already, yeah. But Wednesday go to work. However, if you're not going to do the torches, you're going to do it on the Malay, that means you're not going to do it until, like in a case where it's chaser. Right, so Tuesday,
if it's a haser, meaning it's a 29
day. Right, which is Tuesday is the 30th, right. And Wednesday is the 31st. So let's speak it out. What's going to happen? If you're not going to do it on the 30th at night, so already they did the Tuesday. They celebrated Tuesday, they didn't do melakha.
Always keep the first day, no matter
what. No matter what. Now they're going to have to keep also the second day. And the second day, when they don't see there was a signal, so they'll know that day was not Rosh Hashanah, but they did it already. So therefore, it's going to cost them 2 days of bitul melacha. So therefore, we don't want to do it on a chaser because of the Rosh Hashanah factor. Rav Gibran continues. Kesa da yu masi'in masu'ot, mevi'in klusna'ot. Okay, they used to bring these big poles. And they used to... The poles were made out of eriz. They were made out of cedar wood. And then they used to put like flammable stuff on top of the pole, light them up, in order so the people were able to see it from mountain to mountain. Amar of Yehuda, Dalet Bine Arazimim. Okay, we move quickly here. There's four types of cedar woods, species. Number one, Eriz. Number two, Katrum. Number three, Etz Shemen. Number four, Brosh. Those are the four types of cedar trees. Katrum, Amar Rav, Adra. This Katrum, there's another word for it, we call it Adira. That's the name of the tree. Deber Bishila Amri, Mabliga. Okay, the Katrum is actually called Mabliga. Ve'amri la zu gulmish. Some say, no, it's actually called the gulmish tree. Ufliga de Rabba Ravuna, Damar Rabba Ravuna, Amri Berav, Asara Mine Arazimim. Once, no, there's 10 types of cedar trees. Shene Emar, Eten Bamidbar. I will place in the Midbar, Erez, it's one, Shita, Ve'hadas, Ve'etz Shemen, Asim Ba'araba, I will place in the field. Berosh, Tidhar v'ta'ashur yahdav. So far the pasuk listed 7. Now let's count them. The Gemara is going to explain which each one is. Erez, when it says in the pasuk, Erez arza. That's called arza. Shita turnita. Hadas asa. Hadas is asa, the myrtle branch. Et shemen afarsema, the balsam wood. Brosh barta, boxwood. Tidhar shaga. They call that fir. F-I-R. Ta'ashur shuribna. So the Gemara says, Hani shiv'ahavu. It's only seven. You told me this ten. Ki atar avdimi amar husifu alehem alunim almonim almogim. They added three more. Alunim butmi. That's the elm wood. Almonim beluti. That's the oak wood. Almogim kasita. That's the coral in the bottom of the bottom of the water. Ika de amri arunim armonim almogim. Those are the extra three. Arunim ari. That's the laurels. Armonim dulbi, the chestnut. Almugim kasita, that's the coral. We have a pasuk. Vesi adir lo ya'abrenu. Si adir, a great ship will not be able to pass. Which it says in Latin, we learned when the Beit HaMikdash is going to be built, there's going to be waters that are going to come out of the Beit HaMikdash, be a narrow stream, and the stream is going to become bigger and bigger. So it says in the pasuk, "Vesi adir lo yavrenu," that a great boat is not going to be able to pass through this river that's going to come out of the Beit HaMikdash. Amarav, what is this great boat? Si adir, this great boat, zu burni gedola. This is referring to the great boat. So the Gemara says, "Hechi avde." What do they do with this boat? Well, what's the purpose of having such a gigantic boat? What did they use it for? So the Gemara says they used to use these boats to get the coral from the bottom of the waters. How? They would bring 6,000 people b'tresar yarche shata for 12 months. Some say tresar alfe gabre. Some say 12,000 people b'shita yarche shata, 6 months a year. V'ta'anu la hala. And they filled the boat up with sand. They want to lower the boat to the bed of the ocean, or to the bed of the river. So they would fill it up with water, so the bed of the boat sinks to the bottom. Ad shachna v'nahit. Until it rests on the bottom. Again, the top of the boat is above water. We want the hull of the boat to hit the bottom. Now, bar amora'e, you take a bar amora, like we would call like a diver, scuba diver, that goes under the water. Somebody knows how to swim very well. He goes under there. Venahit bar amura'e. Read it like that. And the bar amura'e goes down, jumps in the water. Ve'katar atune dechitna bechasita. He takes, let's say, flax ropes, strong ropes, and he ties one end of the rope to the coral that's on the bottom of the water. Ve'katar lehu besfinata. And the other part of the rope he ties to the boat. So now you have the boat attached to the coral that's on the bottom of the river. Now what you got to uproot it. How do you uproot it? V'natle hala. You start taking the sandbags off the boat. What's going to happen to the boat? V'shadu nebra. You throw them outside. You throw the sand off the boat. V'kamad midlaya. Now the boat starts to rise. As the boat's rising, what is it doing? It's pulling the coral. Akra. It uproots it. Umatya. And they bring it. Umahalif. And therefore, that's how they cut the core. So these big boats had a purpose to get the core from the bottom of the waters. Now, how expensive was this coral? Umahlif al-had teren bekaspa. For one measure of coral, you can sell it for two measures of silver. Tlat parvata havyan. There were three ports that used to be famous ports in the world. Tarte beromae. Two were by the Romans, v'chada debe persae, and one port was by the Persians, debe romae maskan kasita. By the Roman ports, that's where they used to get the coral. They used to bring up the coral, debe persae, but by the Persian port, maskan marganaita, pearls. Used to go down there to the bottom of the water there, by the oysters, and get the pearls. Umekaryan parvata de mashmahig. The Persians would call their port the port of Mashmaik, which is the kingdom. The port of the kingdom. Amar Rabbi Yohanan. Kol shita v'shita. That we'll call a pine tree. Every pine tree. Shenatlu goyim Yerushalayim, that when the goyim destroyed Jerusalem, so they uprooted the pine trees. Mm-hmm. So every tree that the goyim uprooted, atir kadosh baruch hu lahaziranna. Borei Olam is going to bring it back. Shnei emar eten b'midbar eres shitta. Okay? So ve'en midbar ela Yerushalayim. When it says eten b'midbar, what's the midbar? The midbar is actually a reference to Jerusalem. Shnei emar siyon midbar hayata. So the pasuk is telling you what? Eten b'midbar eres shitta. The shitta is going to come back. What shitta? That's the pine trees. All those pine trees the goyim uprooted, God's going to bring it back to Yerushalayim. Amar Rabbi Yohanan, kol el lomed Torah. Anybody that studies Torah, ve'enu milameda, but he doesn't teach. He learns for himself, so it doesn't benefit anybody. So what is he analogous to? Dome lehadas b'midbar. He's like a hadas in the midbar. Hadas is a very fragrant stick. Very, it has a good smell. But what's the purpose? Milam midbar. Who could benefit from it? So then a person that studies Torah but doesn't give it out, he's like a hadas in the midbar, and nobody can have pleasure from it. Ika de amri, kol alomed Torah umlameda, bemkom she'en tamidei hachamim. A person that studies Torah and he teaches in the place where there's no tamidei hachamim, which means he's disseminating Torah, he's doing what he's supposed to do. Domer lehadas b'midbar. It's like a hadas in the midbar, the haviv. Somebody finds a hadas in the midbar. It's not going on in the midbar. So you see a hadas, so you give the guy, you give benefit. So in a place where there's no pleasure, right? So you find the hadas, it's very, very endearing. So too, in a place where there's no Torah being taught, and this person learns Torah and he disseminates it, so it's like it's an oasis. It's like a hadas in the middle of the midbar, where he benefits the people. ואמר רבי יוחנן, אוי להם לאומות שאין להם תקנה. Woe to the umot, the goyim, that killed the tzaddikim at the time that they destroyed Yerushalayim, שאין להם תקנה. Because they took away something from our nation that cannot be replaced. Why? Everything else that they took away can be replaced. But the tzaddikim that they killed, you can't replace them. So the Gemara says, שנימא תחת הנחושת אבי זהב. God says, listen, they destroyed the Nehoshet, they took away the copper, because I'll replace it with gold, no problem, these are commodities. Ta'ata barzel avi kesef. They took away the iron, I'll bring the silver. Ta'ata etzim Nehoshet. They took away wood, I'll bring back copper. Ta'ata abanim barzel. However, ta'at Rabbi Akiva v'chaverav may mivin. They killed Rabbi Akiva and all his colleagues. What are you going to bring? How are you going to replace them? V'aleim u'omer. And God says regarding the death of the tzaddikim, v'nikiti damam lo nikiti, which is Borei Olam says, if I'm going to come and atone and forgive, let's say the umot ha'olam from their sins, v'nikiti, when I come to forgive them, damam lo nikiti, I cannot forgive them for the blood that they spilled. The other stuff is replaceable, but this what they did is irreplaceable. That's what Rashi says in the bottom. Im bati lenakot et ha'umot b'shar avonot, lo anakim et damam shel Yisrael. If I come to exonerate them from the other sins, meaning v'nikiti, if I'm coming to exonerate them, damam lo nikiti, I cannot exonerate them from the blood that they spilled of Klal Yisrael. U'me'ayin ayu mas'in masu'ot. So now the Mishnah continued. Mishnah listed five mountains where they used to do the torch signals from one mountain to another mountain, etc. So the Gemara says the last mountain closest to Bavel was called Bet Baltin. Mm-hmm. That was the place, that was the fifth place. So the Gemara says, my Bet Baltin, what is this Bet Baltin? Amar Rav Zu Biram. Okay, that's the place called Biram. And it says, from that place the Gola, the exile, would be able to see the torch. So the Gemara says, my Gola. What's the Gola? Amar Rav Yosef Zu Pupedita. That's the city of Babel called Pupedita. Now it says, when they got the Pupedita, the signals, the person standing on that mountain would see the whole exile would light up with torches. So the Gemara says, and we'd be light up like torches, like a bonfire. So the Gemara says, my Kimdurat Ish. What does it mean that the whole Galut became lit up like a bonfire? Tana kol echad ve'echad notel avuka biyado ve'oleh l'rosh kago. To show that they got the signal, everybody would take a torch themselves and go up to their roof and they would wave their torches. So when you looked at the Bavel, you saw the whole Bavel light up like a bonfire. Tanya Rabbi Shomer Elazar Omer, Af Harim v'chiyar v'gedar v'havruteha. Which means there were other mountains. The Mishnah only listed five of them. So he said you should know there's other mountains as well. There's Harim and Khiyar and Geder. They used to put
the other ones,
right? They used to put. So according to them, there's really 8 mountains. Mm-hmm. So comes the Gemara and says, where were these mountains? Ika da amre bene u bene havu kaime. Some say these mountains were in between the 5 that we said. So just, you know, put them in intervals in between the mountains. Ika de amre lehach kisa de Eretz Yisrael havu kaime. Some say it was on the other side of Eretz Yisrael, which means, let's say Eretz Yisrael is a strip, right? So now you can reach Bavel from, let's say, both sides. So he says they would access Bavel on 2 sides of Eretz Yisrael. And therefore the Mishnah listing you the 5 mountains on one side of Eretz Yisrael, and the other 3 mountains were on the other side, so they had 2 simultaneous signals,
south.
Yeah, north and south, that were giving the signals towards Bavel. Either it was part of the same 5 mountains, just had these in between them, and some say no, it was a different setup on the other side of Eretz Yisrael. More hashiv de haigisa, more hashiv de haigisa. The Mishnah gave you the mounds on one side, and the rabbi over here, Rabbi Azad, gives you the mounds on the other side. Amar Rabbi Hanan, ben kol achat ve'achat shmona parsaot. Between each mountain in the Mishnah, there was 8 parsaot. So if there's 5 mounds, it's got to be 32 parsaot. Right? There's 4 spaces, right? Kama avodehu, taltin ve'tartin. There would be 32 parsaot altogether from mountain number 1, meaning Bahar Zetim, all the way to Bavel. Behai ha'idana tuvahavu. So what are you talking about? Today it's much further. Which is you take a walk from Haram Mishha to Bavel, it's much further than 32 parsaot. So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye astatume astatum nehu derache. The roads became sealed up. Which is before the roads were clear. So we had easy shortcut roads to Bavel. Today, the Goyim destroyed Yerushalayim, so all these access roads became sealed up, so now you gotta go around. Mm-hmm. So the route became longer. So therefore the Gemara says, Dechtiv, Lachen hineni sach et darkech basirim. Pasuk says the name of the prophet, I am going to hedge your road with thorns. Which means the road's going to be sealed up. Therefore, you're going to have to take a roundabout route. Rav Nachman bar Yitzhak Amar Mehacha. Rav Nachman bar Yitzhak says from here, Tichtiv Nitivotai Iva. My roads became twisted. And therefore, they weren't able to take the straight route, which would be 32 parsaot. So they had to take a longer route. Comes the Mishnah, Haser Gedolah Haita Yerushalayim. There was a great courtyard in Yerushalayim. Ubet Ya'azek Aita Nikrit. The name of this courtyard was called Bet Ya'azek. Ulesham Kola Aidim Mitkanesim. Over there, all the witnesses that would come to testify for the Chodesh, they would gather in this courtyard. Ubetin Botkin Otam Sham. And that's where Betin would interrogate them. The Se'udot Gedolot Osim Lahim. And they would give them Se'udot. They would feed them. Bishvishu Regidim Lavo. In order that they should be accustomed to coming there. Which means they gave them a meal. If the person knows he's going to get a free lunch when he gets to Yerushalayim, so you know, if he's contemplating, should I go or not, he'll go. So therefore they would feed them over there, so don't get or not, in order to accustom them to come to the Beit HaMikdash. Barishona, now, huh? Barishona, lo ayu zazim misham kol hayom. Now when the witnesses would come on Shabbat, a lot of the witnesses, they came outside the Tchum. So the halakha says, once they get to Bet Ya'azek, so now they cannot move from Bet Ya'azek. They're stuck in that haser the whole day. So they would not be able to move out of Bet Ya'azek based on the law. So once you get to your place, so the whole Bet Ya'azek is considered 4 amot. Because only once you walk out of your tomb, you only have 4 amot. So therefore the Bet Ya'azek is considered their 4 amot, but they were not able to walk any further. Hitkin Rabban Gamliel HaZaken Shum Malechin Alpaim Amal Lechol Ruach. The Bangalore says, you know what? Anybody that comes to testify for the new moon in Yerushalayim on Shabbat, we're going to consider him a resident of Yerushalayim, and therefore he gets 2,000 amah to any direction. Now normally, only the inhabitants that were in Yerushalayim going into the Shabbat, they get the 2,000 amah. This guy should not get 2,000 amah, he should only get 4 amot. But why did he do that? Because he was concerned if you're going to lock them up in Bet Ya'azek the whole Shabbat, nobody's going to show up. guy says, I come to Jerusalem, I got to stay in this holding pen until after Shabbat, it's going to be jail for him. So the Rabbi says, you know what? Any witness that comes to Yerushalayim, you can walk 2,000 amah in any direction in Yerushalayim. You're not confined to 4 amot. Not only the witnesses, a midwife, let's say, that's coming to help a lady give birth. So now, she's coming outside the tchum. And she gets a message, let's say, that the lady's giving birth. So she walks outside the tchum where she lives to this person to help her give birth. Now what's going to happen? If you're going to tell her, well, now you're stuck, you can't move out of your four amot, she's not going to want to come in the first place. So therefore, they allow her, the hakama, in order to give her an incentive to come to the city to help the ladies give birth, she can walk 2,000 amah from wherever she is. Huh?
Well,
that's why she's allowed to go outside the tomb.
I'm saying, to make a gizara, couldn't she go anywhere?
She can go outside the tomb to get there. I'm talking about once she gets there.
She can't leave. Oh, leave.
Once she gets there, she's stuck now. She can't walk. She can't walk for amah. She can't walk out of the house. She says, no, they made a takana, she can walk. Well, let's say you have volunteers that are coming to a city that was ravaged by a fire. So they're coming, the firefighters, they're coming to put out the fire, to save the people, the children, bar minan, there's a sakana. When they get to the city, they can walk as much as they want, 2,000 amah. We don't limit them to four amot. Umina gayas. Gayas would, let's say, an army that attacked a different city, so you're coming to protect the city also, they'll give the volunteers, the soldiers, they give them more than, they give them 2,000 amah. Umina nahar. Let's say you have a ravaging river, like the dam broke, and now the water is, rising over the city. So you're coming to save the city, the people from drowning. Umina mapolet, probably a building that collapsed. So you're going to save the people, parminan. So therefore you also get 2,000 amma. Hare'elu ke'anche ha'ir, we consider them like the people of the city. V'yesh la'em alpayim lechol ruach. And they have 2,000 amma to all sides. Comes the Gemara. Ibayilehu. Your last question. Bet Ya'azek Tenan or Bet Yazek Tenan? What's the name of this courtyard? Is it called Ya'azek or is it called Yazek? Mm-hmm. Now, what's the difference? Bet Ya'azek Tenan. If you're calling it Bet Ya'azek, Lishna Me'elyahu, that would be a nice language. Why? Dichtiv, Vayazekehu, Vaysakelehu. The Torah says, or the Navi says, Vayazekehu. You will ring, which means person has a road, right? So it says they put a fence around the road or around the area, so you call that an Isaac. Isaac is like a circle, a ring. So you make a fence, you circle the area, then you take away the stones, and therefore you made like a penned or a fenced area. So they would call it Bet Ya'azek, mm-hmm. The area that was fenced. That would be a nice way of saying it. Or Dilma Bet Yazek Tenan, Lishna Ditsa'arahu. Or they called it Yazek, which is a language of anguish. Kedichtiv, Vu Asur Ba'azikim. The fellow, the Pasuk says, was tied up with chains. And therefore, Yazek would be the place of chains, which means the person who gets there, he's stuck. He's locked up in that place. So the Gemara wants to know, what do they call this area? Do they call it the positive name, Yazek, over the fenced area? Or do they call it Bet Yazek, the place where a person was, chained up or penned up or locked up? So the Gemara says, now obviously this is going according to the opinion that says, in Zazim, Misham Kulayom. So according to the Bangam, this is before the Bangam is Takana. After the Bangam is Takana, you're able to walk wherever you want. But they're discussing in the original Takana where you had to stay in Bet Ya'azek or Yazek. What did they call it? Did they call it a positive name or they called it a name that implied problems? So the Gemara says, Amar Abayu, inconvenience. Amar Abayu, Tashema, Se'udot Kedolot Hayu Osim Nahem Sham, Kedesh Yu Regilim Labo. Obviously you called it a positive name. Because you see it was a positive experience. Don't you see we gave them se'udot gedolot? They went to Bet Ya'azek at a party. They gave them meals and stuff like that. So it must be they called it Bet Ya'azek. They called it the positive name. Who told you? Dilma tarti avu avdebu. Maybe both things applied. Maybe they were locked in there for the whole day, but at the same time they gave them se'udot. So then we have no proof. Maybe it was called Bet Ya'azek, the place where they were chained up, but what? They happened to give them Se'udot in order to entice them to come. So you have no proof just because they gave them Se'udot Gedolot that they called it Bet Yazek. So the Gemara really leaves that in abeyance. What was the name of the Chasid where the witnesses would be? Okay, now we discuss how they interrogated the witnesses. Kesad, Botkin, Eta'idim. How did they interrogate the witnesses? Zug Sheba Rishon, Botkin Oto Rishon. Right, the first group that comes, first come, first serve. They interrogate them first. Umachnisim tagadol shebehem. They bring the older witness or the more important of the witnesses. Ve'omrim lo, emor, kesat ra'ita tenebana. Okay, now they have to interrogate him. How did you see the moon? What was the testimony? What did you see? Lifnei hama o la'achar hama. Was the moon in front of the sun? Or was it behind the sun? Was it trailing? Or was it... La'achar hama is it was trailing the sun. She's in the sun cycle, right? We said certain times of the month, the sun is in front, and the moon is trailing it. That's actually at the end of the month. That's the way it's supposed to be. That close to sunset, that's when the moon comes out. So therefore, we have the... they want to know, was the moon behind the sun? Or was the moon ahead of the sun? They want to know exactly what they saw. Now, the Sfona or the Droma, was the moon to the south of the sun, or was it to the north of the sun, or to the south of the sun? The position. Kamaya Gavawa. How high was it? Which is when you looked at it, did it look, you know, like one story high, or did it look two stories? How high did the moon look in the sky at the time that you saw it? Ulaana ya note. And where was it pointing to? We'll see what that means in the Gemara. Vechamaya rachav. How wide was it? How the crescent of the moon? How wide was it? Imamar lifnei hama lo amar kinum. Well, we know if they say it was in front of the sun, then you know he said nothing, because we know already it can't be at the time of Rosh Chodesh. It has to be the sun. The moon is trailing the sun, and not the sun is trailing the moon. And then, right away, it comes along and says, "Lifnei hama." You know, the guy said nothing. Veharkach. We'll go to all these solar things in a minute and the lunar calculations. But let's get the point first. Veharkach. Hayu machnisin et hasheni. Then they bring the second witness in. Ubotkin oto. Then they ask him the same questions. In nimsiu devehem mechuvanim. If this testimony matches up, edutam kayemet. So the edut is accepted. Ushar kol hazugot shu'alin otam le'ashei devarim. Now the other witnesses that show up, you just ask them, you know, some questions, just some highlight questions. You don't got to ask them all these questions anymore. Why? Lo shi'usirichim them. We don't need them. We have the two witnesses already. So what are you wasting time? No, era kedeshlo yitzu bepahei nefesh b'shishu regidim navo. We don't want them to go home depressed because we came all the way in and they didn't need us. Okay, that's what we need them. We ask them certain questions over there. Did you see this? You saw that? Oh, very good. So thank you very much. And they write it up as if they did something. And therefore, so they don't go home. Because we want them to be accustomed to coming to the Beth HaMikdash. So that will make them feel good. We ask them some questions as well. Okay. Now, in order to understand exactly this last thing that we're saying, with the cycle of the moon, we're going to read it inside over here in the art scroll just to get a clarity so we don't... Don't say anything wrong. We're going to read it together. We have a couple of minutes. We'll start from 23b2. We're going to read 26. Okay, we'll read it inside the English. It's a little clearer. Now she presents here some background information which we will paraphrase and elaborate. The sun rises each morning in the east and sets each evening in the west. In Eretz Yisrael, the sun never travels at a right angle to the horizon, which means the sun doesn't go like this, like a straight, you know, east-west in a straight arc. Okay? Rather, the sun rises at an angle to the south. Which means the sun starts, let's say, in the east, okay, and goes on an arc, I should say, right? Around to the south, and then comes back to the west, tilting to the north. Again, if east is here, so the sun rises in the east, right, arcs to the south, and then comes around to the west and sets. So it's closer to the northwest when it is setting, but it arcs via the south. Okay, that's the way it works. You see the picture right there. If you look at these things, starting from the east, you see the arc? goes towards the south and then comes back down towards the west.
Just tilts southward. That's
tilts southward, exactly, in its movement. Correct.
When it comes down.
That's right. Now, see diagram. Good. During the morning, as the sun moves westward, rising higher and higher, it also travels farther and farther towards the south. Good. At noon, the sun is at the highest point and also at its most southerly point. Good. That's midday. Then the sun begins to go down, turning towards the north as it continues on its westward course. During the afternoon, the sun becomes lower and lower, continuing to the north, eventually setting in the west at an angle, like we see. Thus the sun rises in the east, travels southward in the morning, and continues northward in the afternoon, setting in the west. The new moon follows the sun in its path, traveling behind it. Okay, that's it. The Rosh Chodesh, the moon trails the sun. On the 30th day, the new moon, which rises shortly after sunrise and sets shortly after sunset, is very small and therefore cannot be seen in intense daylight. Thus, it can be seen only close to sunset in the late afternoon. Since the new moon trails the sun that is setting towards the north, the moon will be seen to the sun's south. Okay, let's look at the picture right there. You see the moon, the sun coming down. The moon is trailing it, so it's behind it. So therefore it's still in the southern, it's almost to the south of the sun at that time. Now, when are you going to see the new moon? Right when the sun's about to come down. Now it gets dark a little, right? Since the crescent of the moon at that point is very thin, so you have to wait till the sun comes down towards sunset, where it gets a little dark. Then you're able to see it for a moment. There's a visibility to see the new moon. And then the moon sets as well with it. And therefore you miss it. So there's a little window of opportunity. Now you're not going to see it in the middle of the day over when it's in the south. When the sun's still in the south, you're not going to see anything because it's too bright. So you're going to have to wait till the end of the day to catch the moon, that crescent. Okay. So now, let's just go back for a second. So when they ask the look at the Mishnah. When they ask the witnesses, Lifnei hama or lahar hama, was it before the sun or after the sun? Now, obviously, if they're going to say it was after the sun, it can't be. That means they don't know what they're talking about. They're false witnesses. Because the moon always at the 30th day has to be trailing the sun, like we see in the picture over here on 23b3. Good. Now, the next question they would say is Lisfona or Lidroma. They would say, was it to the sun's north or to its south? See, where was the moon? Now, the moon has to be to the south at that point. Okay? Because it's trailing it, so it's going to be to the south. Now, that sounds like it's really the same question. Because once already you say it's trailing it, so automatically it's got to be to the south. It can't trail it and be to its north. Uh-huh. So to that, the Gemara asks the question, Hainu lifnei hama, Hainu lisfona, Hainu le'achar hama, Hainu lidroma. Which means, the Gemara says, if you're going to say it's lifnei hama, it's in front of the sun, that means the sun is trailing it, Hainu lisfona, so it's going to be to the north, it's going to be on the other side. Yeah. However, you say if it's after the sun, meaning it's trailing it, so then it's the drama. It's the south. So you're asking basically the same question twice. That's the Gemara's question, right? So that the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Pigimata lifnei hama o lahar hama. It's two questions, right? The concavity of the moon. We want to know, is it facing towards the sun or not the sun? Which the first question is it lifnei hama or lahar hama? That's the first. Which means, is it trailing it? Is it behind it or is it in front of it? That's one question. Then the second question is, the moon itself has a concave part. That's the crescent, right? Goes around. So you have the two points, and you have the hollowness, right? In between the two points. We want to know those two points of the moon. Where are they facing? Are they facing towards the sun? Or does it have its back towards the sun? That's very important. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Pigimata lifnei hama or lahar hama. So the first question really was that because of the indentation of the concavity, was it towards the sun or away from the sun? Now look at the pictures on the bottom of the article. You see pictures, they're beautiful. the top picture, you see the concavity towards the sun. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. And then you have, the next picture is it's away from it. Now let's read 38. The new moon appears as a thin crescent. Since the moon is really round, its concavity is called its indentation. For that is where the moon seems to be indented. That's called a pigima. Because it looks like it's like banged in. Mm-hmm. Right? You don't see it. So it's called a pigima. According to Abaye, the question asked to the witness was whether the concavity of the moon was facing the sun, or was it facing away from the sun? Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, im amar lifnei hama lo amar kilum. If he said it was facing the sun, he said nothing. Why? 39. In actual fact, at any moment, half of the moon's surface is illuminated by the sun. However, due to the observer's position on Earth, not all of the light part is visible. At times, none is visible. At other times, it is completely visible in the middle of the month. At other times, only a crescent of the light side is visible. That's the beginning of the month. That which we see as the concavity is the dark side of the moon. Since the moon receives its light from the sun, it is obvious that the concavity of the moon can never face the sun. It's always away from it, like in the bottom picture. And if they come along and say it's facing it, you know what you're talking about. They're your false witnesses. Thus, if the witness claimed that he saw the concavity of the moon facing the sun, his testimony is dismissed. Now, go a little further. The Amar of Yohanan, my dichtiv. What does it mean in the pasuk? Hamshel vafahad imo oseh shalom bimromav. Hamshel is dominion, power. Upahad, fear, imo, is with him, by God. Oseh shalom bimromav, but God makes peace in the heavens. So what's the pasuk talking about? Me'olam lo ra'ata hama pigimata shel levana. God never showed the sun the pigima of the levana. I mean, the concave part of the moon never faces the sun. And furthermore, velo pigimata shel keshet. And for that matter, the sun never saw the concavity of a rainbow. Because the rainbow, always its concavity, is facing away from the sun. Right. Now why? God making peace over here. What's the peace? So he says, pigimata shel levana dehal shadata. We don't want to dishearten the moon. The moon originally was like the size of the sun when it was created. But then what happened? God punished the moon and shrunk it. So therefore, we don't want the moon to be facing the sun to see how big the sun is. Because then the moon would get halishut adat. It'd feel bad. So therefore, the crescent of the moon faces away from the, has its back to the sun, in order to make shalom. So God did a famous kivyachol, he's teaching us a lesson obviously, that he didn't want to embarrass the moon, so it doesn't face the sun. Now, pigimata shel keshet delo limru ovdei hama gireh ka mishadya. The sun is shooting arrows at those who deny its divinity, which means if the person holds a bow and arrow, when you're holding a bow and arrow, the concave part of the bow is towards the person. Okay? The concave face, you take an arrow and you string it and you shoot it, right? So now, if the rainbow's concave part is facing the sun, it looks like the sun is using this rainbow in order to shoot as a bow and arrow all the people that are not worshipping it. And then with the Avodah Zarah would say, see that? The sun is angry because you people are not worshipping it. So it's taking out its bow as if to shoot. So then God says, no, I'm not going to give the people a chance to talk like that. The bow is faced away. And therefore, it's not that the people cannot make this claim over there. So that's why you'll never have the pigima of the moon facing the sun, nor you'll have the pigima of the rainbow facing the sun itself as well. Huh? Why is that Oseh Shalom B'Mromav? So can it AM? Because now when there's no Avodah Zarah, obviously you're breaking the claims of the Avodah Zarah. When there's no Avodah Zarah, can it, there's the Shalom Ba'olam. Shalom is completion. Completion is the oneness. The oneness of God is now promoted in the world.